offering our humble pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Some of you might be wondering what we are doing here. We have completed the 16 discourses of the 1990 Samukho series, and honestly speaking, we should have wrapped up with that. But dear listeners, we are going to continue this series for just one more discourse, and as we go through this one discourse, you will realize why it is absolutely not out of place to study this discourse as part of the 1990 Samukho series. At the very outset, we thank Mrs. Fani Banda. She's been a part of this program a couple of times, and she's been a constant source of encouragement and advice for us for this program. It was she who suggested that we go through the Guru Purnima discourse of the 1990 year, because that was the first discourse Swami gave at the end of the 1990 Samukhos. And in ways more than one, this discourse is more like a summary of the 1990 Samukhos, whatever Swami said there. So it is quite apt to conclude this Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam with this discourse we taught, and with prayers to Swami, we endeavor to study this discourse too as part of this series. Today, to join me in the discussion, I have the pleasure of having the company of my brother Hari Shankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. So before we begin this program, I invite him to join me. Sai Ram Hari.
Sai Ram Prem. Good to be back after a long time.
Definitely good to have you back. And I'm sure you would have gone through this discourse.
Yes, just as you were saying that it's a summary of what Swami had spoken during the summer course.
Right.
But also it could be a summary of almost all the knowledge that is contained in the Vedanta.
Very true.
Like at various, as we go through the discourse, we see at various places, like what has been spoken of in the Upanishads and Swami expounding on that. It's literally a gist of the Upanishads themselves.
And quite aptly titled, of course, this is for the Guru Purnima, or the occasion of the Guru Purnima, that the discourse, according to the Satya Sai Speaks, is titled The Guru Within. But as you said, even the 1990 Samukho series, for that reason, I think you were here as part of a couple of discourses. One of the most difficult ones, the one on the three gunas, the concept of the panchikritam, and you know, the 1/8 and the 1/4 forming the different gunas,
different
combinations, right? I think you were the one who shared the fact that it comes from Sankhya Yoga.
Sankhya philosophy.
Sankhya philosophy. And like that, many other parts of that 1990 Samukho series came from very important segments in Hindu Vedanta.
Yes.
So that 1990 Samukho series itself was quite an expansive one, and it is indeed a very apt summary as we would go through this discourse. It is indeed a very profound discourse. So, Hari, what do you suggest? Should we go to the first clip? We'll listen to the first clip, and shall we start from there?
Yes, I think let Swami take the stage.
Right. So, dear listeners, we'll play the first clip of that discourse. At the end of it, we'll see what Swami is. We'll try to assimilate what Swami is telling in that discourse clip.
Samsara Svapnatulyo hi Samsara Svapnatulyo hi Ragadvishadi Sankulaha Sambhavam Sambhavam Satyavadbhati Sambhavam Satyavadbhati Prabodhe Satya Satbhavat Prabodhe Satya Satbhavat Samsara Svapnatulyohi Ragadveshadisankula. Prabhati Satya Sadbhati Premode Satya Sadbhavat. Prema Swarupulara,
embodiments of divine law.
Kalalu kantunnanta varaku అన్నీయు సత్యమనే అనిపిస్తాయి, వినిపిస్తాయి, కనిపిస్తాయి.
ఎవ్రీథింగ్ కెన్ బి సీన్, హర్డ్ అండ్ లిజన్ టు.
అతులని రాగద్వేషాలతో కూడిన సంసారము, జ్ఞానోదయములకు పూర్వము సత్యముగానే గోచరిస్తుంది.
In the same way, before realization, likes and dislikes look alike.
Paramartha dasalo praveshinchinappudu prapanchamantayi kudanu swapnatulyam avutundi.
Once you get the vision of God, the entire world becomes a dream.
పంచేంద్రియ మహాభూత పంచేంద్రియ మహాభూత సంభవం కర్మ సంచితం. పంచేంద్రియ మహాభూత సంభవం కర్మ సంచితం. శరీరం సుఖదుఖానాం, శరీరం సుఖదుఖానాం భోగాయ భోగాయ
పృథ్వీ,
జలము, అగ్ని, వాయువు, ఆకాశవాది పంచమహాభూతముల యొక్క సమ్మేళనమే ఈ యొక్క శరీరం.
దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ఈజ్ ఎ కాంబినేషన్ ఆఫ్ the five great elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether.
ఇవి క్రమమైన పాళ్లతో కూడి ఉంటుంది.
These have got some regulated standards.
దీనిని భౌతిక శరీరం అని చెప్పబడుతుంది.
This is called the physical body.
సమస్త ప్రపంచమునకు సంబంధ బాంధవ్యమును కల్పించినది ఈ శరీరమే.
ఇట్ ఇస్ దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ విచ్ ఎస్టాబ్లిషెస్ ఆల్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ రిలేషన్స్ విత్ ద వరల్డ్.
దీనిని పంచీకరణము అని కూడా పిలువవచ్చు.
అనదర్ నేమ్ ఫర్ దిస్ ఈజ్ పంచీకరణ.
ఇందులో ఆత్మ జాగ్రత్త అవస్థలో కూడి ఉంటుంది.
In this, Atma would be in the waking state.
Sarvendriyamulu kudanu paripurnamuga pani chestuntayi.
All the five senses will be functioning fully.
Ee shariramme sukha dukkhamulaku nilayam.
This body itself is the home for joy and sorrow.
Idi మూడు భాగములుగా విభజించబడినది.
దిస్ హెస్ బీన్ డివైడెడ్ ఇంటూ త్రీ డివిజన్స్.
స్థూల, సూక్ష్మ కారణములు అని.
అండ్ దట్ ఈజ్ గ్రాస్, సటిల్ అండ్ కాజల్.
ఈ శరీరము కేవలము అన్నమయ ప్రాణము.
దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ఈజ్ ద రిజల్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్.
ఇది పరిపూర్ణ జడము.
దిస్ ఇస్ ఇనర్ట్ టోటలీ.
ఇది కేవలము ఒక పనిముట్టు వంటిది.
దిస్ ఇస్ ఓన్లీ ఎన్ ఇన్స్ట్రుమెంట్.
మనకు కనిపించినది ఈ స్థూల శరీరము.
వాట్ వి సీ ఇస్ దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
దీనిని సత్యమని నిత్యమని విశ్వసించి,
కన్సిడరింగ్ దిస్ యాజ్ ట్రూత్ అండ్ ఎటర్నల్,
సర్వస్వమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వాన్ని విస్మరిస్తున్నాడు మానవుడు.
మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ గివింగ్ అప్ ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ విచ్ ఇస్ రియలీ ఎటర్నల్ అండ్ పర్మనెంట్.
పంచ ప్రాణ మనోబుద్ధి దశేంద్రియ సమన్వితం. పంచ ప్రాణ మనోబుద్ధి దశేంద్రియ సమన్వితం. అపంచీకృత భూతోత్తం అపంచీకృత భూతోత్మ భోగాయ తనయే నమః. పంచ ప్రాణములు మనోబుద్ధి దశేంద్రియముల యొక్క చేరికే సూక్ష్మ శరీరం.
ద సటిల్ బాడీ కన్సిస్ట్ ఆఫ్ 5 లైవ్ బ్రెత్స్, మైండ్, ఇంటెలెక్ట్ అండ్ 10 సెన్సెస్.
దీనిని స్వప్న స్థితి అని కూడాను చెప్పవచ్చు.
దిస్ మే ఆల్సో బి కాల్డ్ డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్.
ఇందులో వ్యక్తి అంతర్భూతమై ఉంటుంది.
ద పర్సనాలిటీ ఈజ్ నాట్ సో వెరీ విజిబుల్ ఇన్ దిస్ కేస్.
ఈ సూక్ష్మ శరీరమునందు మానవత్వము కేవలము ఒక నూతన ప్రపంచముగా కల్పించుకుంటుంది.
ఇన్ దిస్ పర్టిక్యులర్ స్టేట్ ఆఫ్ సటిల్ బాడీ మైండ్ క్రియేట్స్ ఇట్స్ ఓన్ న్యూ వరల్డ్.
ఇది తనకు తానే ప్రమాణముగా నిలుస్తుంది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ స్టాండర్డ్ ఆఫ్ ప్రూఫ్ బై ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్.
ఇది ఎవరితో కూడా సంబంధ బాంధవ్యము లేకుండా పరిమితమై ఉంటుంది తనకు తానే.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ వరల్డ్ ఇన్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ వితౌట్ హ్యావింగ్ ఎనీ రిలేషన్షిప్ విత్ ఎనీథింగ్ వాట్స్ ఎవర్.
ఈ స్వప్నావస్థ యందు సమస్తమును తానే కల్పించుకుంటుంది.
ఇన్ ది డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ ఇట్ క్రియేట్స్ ఫర్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ అండ్ ఇట్ బికమ్స్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ మెనీ థింగ్స్ ఇట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్.
రూపము కాని రూపమును.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ ఫామ్ వితౌట్ ఫామ్.
వినికిడి గాని వినికిడిని.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ హియరింగ్ వితౌట్ హియరింగ్.
రుచి కాని రుచిని కూడాను తానే సృష్టించుకుంటుంది.
ఇట్ క్రియేట్స్ ఆల్సో ఎ టేస్ట్ వితౌట్ బీయింగ్ ఎనీ టేస్ట్ దేర్.
కానీ ఈ సృష్టి అంతయి కూడాను తనకు తానే పరిమితమై ఉంటుంది.
బట్ దిస్ ఎంటైర్ క్రియేషన్ ఈజ్ రెస్ట్రిక్టెడ్ టు దట్ ఇండివిజువల్స్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ అలోన్.
ఈ స్వప్నమునందు 10 మంది ఒక రూములో పవడించినప్పటికీ ఎవరి కలలు వారివి, ఎవరి అనుభూతి వారిది, ఎవరి కర్మ వారిది.
ఇన్ దిస్ డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ ఈవెన్ వెన్ దెర్ ఆర్ 10 పీపుల్స్ లివింగ్ ఆర్ స్లీపింగ్ ఇన్ ద సేమ్ రూమ్, ఈచ్ వన్స్ డ్రీమ్ ఈజ్ డిఫరెంట్ ఫ్రమ్ ది అదర్స్. ఈచ్ వన్స్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఈజ్ వెరీ యునిక్ అండ్ రెస్ట్రిక్టెడ్.
ఈ స్వప్నమునకు జాగ్రత్తకు ఏమాత్రము కూడా సంబంధము ఉండదు.
దెర్ ఈస్ నో రిలేషన్షిప్ వాట్స్ ఎవర్ టు దిస్ డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ అండ్ ది వేకింగ్ స్టేట్.
So that was the first clip in that discourse. And just for the record, those 3 verses which Swami quoted in that part of that discourse are from the work of Adi Shankara, which is called Atma Bodha, the Atma Bodha Bhashya, which is supposed to be a work inspired by the Upanishads, not exactly a commentary on any particular Upanishad. I think that's what, if I'm not wrong.
Yes.
And interesting first part where Swami is speaking about the dream nature, or the fact that whatever you see and whatever you're living through is actually the creation of a dreamlike creation, which is not true in its existence.
So Swami is again taking us on a journey within to find out who we truly are. And he begins by actually looking at our experience of the world itself. Like both in the dream state and in the waking state. And he says that, everything appears so real. Our likes, our dislikes, our experience of joy, sorrow, all these are so real till the truth actually dawns on us. And just as you were mentioning Shankaracharya, I just remembered that in the Brahma Sutras, he gives a very apt description for this. It's called superimposition. He uses the word adhyasa.
Okay.
And he says it's when we mistake in the dim light, we mistake what is a rope for a snake, and immediately fear, it creates fear within us.
Right.
So he calls this the Swarupadhyasa, that is, we mistake, we superimpose our image of a snake on what is a rope,
right?
An inert rope. We imagine a snake over there, and not only do we imagine a snake, we also imagine, that creates fear within us.
Right.
Right. So all this entire experience is so, so real for us that there is a snake and that is attacking us and we feel the fear, till such time somebody, puts on the light and then we notice that it is nothing more than a rope. So that is precisely what Swami is saying, that till the dawn of wisdom, till we actually have that illumination, till then we mistake this life or what experience of life is something very real.
Very true. Analogy of that rope and rope in darkness which appears like the snake. It's a very popular analogy in Vedanta, and it has a very deep meaning, especially when you're talking of Swami saying that whatever you see, whatever you feel, whatever you hear is all unreal. If you look at that very experience, as you said, it is not there. There is no snake there. You believe that it is there.
Yeah.
And that thought itself, if you really look at even the physiological change it causes in you, your blood pressure goes up, the adrenaline starts secreting.
Yeah.
There is something which is perceptible happening from something which does not exist at all.
Yes.
From an unreality, there is so much of real, at least what appears to be real, is happening. So that's what Swami is saying here, that if the basis itself is removed, however real the emotions which arise come, yes, however real that like and dislike appears, however real pain appears, since it's based on something which is not existent, everything is unreal.
And in fact, just to add, there's an example which he gives which may not be so well known. So Prem, when you were talking about the rope and the snake is non-existent.
Right.
Now he gives another example. He says, just look at a crystal which is, next to a red flower. And he says, the crystal is pure white. But because you see the reflection of the red flower in the crystal, you begin to imagine the crystal itself is colored red.
Right.
So he says there is both the crystal and the flower are both real. But what you superimpose now is the color of red on the pure white crystal. So he calls this another form of adhyasa, yet another superimposition that you do. So in the previous example, there was no snake and he created a snake. And here there is a crystal, but now we are superimposing a property upon that.
Right. I think another common example which is usually given in optics is when you have an object, whenever we see a color, the physics behind it is it absorbs all the other spectrums from white light and reflects what is the color of the object.
Yes.
Right? That's what we see it as. So to see an object in its true color, you have to give it white light. If you give it a colored light to reflect, then what it reflects will be just part of its real nature,
yes,
the real color. So what, in what situation you're seeing it, with what perspective you're seeing it, actually changes what even you see, because we often say that what you see is the reality.
Yeah.
Go by what you see, go by what you witness. But even that can be skewed based on the environment in which you're seeing it.
Yeah, very much like if you go to a car showroom, just by changing the light, we could be looking at the same car, right. Prem and I, we could be looking at the same car, and Prem will say it is blue, and I come a few minutes later, they change the lighting, and I'll insist it is green. And all the time it could be a whole different color.
Right. And I think many would have experienced it, especially when they go for shopping and buy clothes. Many times the clothes look so beautiful and exciting when it's in the shop. When you get it home, you wonder, how did I end up picking up this?
Yeah, it's all in the lighting.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in this discourse as we go through, we will come across many such analogies which are classic analogies from the Vedanta,
yes,
which actually bring out very profound messages. And I think it's not without reason why scholars who came much later also referred to these very analogies and try to convey the same message.
Yes. And because, see, like, just to look at it very practically, where, you know, where we see two, where there is one. That is, you know, ultimately,
right,
the duality that we impose on what is non-existent.
Right.
And just notice that the moment I create two, like, we also create this feeling of called fear. And it need not be, you know, the intense feeling of fear. But in reality, you know, we are always fearful about the people around us. We are fearful what they think of us. We are always concerned with, you know, what could they do to us? What are they saying about us?
Right.
And this, the moment I do that, I also become the effect of that feeling. Like, just as you said that the moment fear is created, I mean, you look at the snake and there's fear created, it also creates physiological changes within us. And just the same way, if I am afraid of another person, of what he would say, what he would do, and that again has an effect on me. I begin to react to something that I myself have created.
Exactly. I think this is a everyday situation which we all go through.
Absolutely.
You know, when your approach and the way you interact with the person is so colored by your opinion of that person.
Yes.
It's something which we see day to day. You know, it's a direct application of how the superimposition happens in our day to day behavior.
Yeah. You know, I recall, you know, I had this trouble about a few weeks ago that I was giving a talk in a particular samiti and in a Sai center. And
all right.
Yeah. So, I started, you know, doubting myself because I was looking at the reaction of the people in front of me, whether, you know, I was actually boring them or was I saying something that was really useful. Till at some point of time, I realized that, you know, the poor people sitting over there, they're just listening to what I am saying. And I have really no idea what is passing through their mind, except the ones I have created, like that they are bored, etc. And the moment that came to me, that I am even beginning to react to that, that was, you know, such a liberating feeling. That, you know, the moment you are free of that, now you can actually concentrate on the job on hand, and that is conveying Swami's message. So,
right.
Yeah, so many a time we actually get sucked in by, you know, what we ourselves have created. Like, even in our interactions with people, we completely superimpose our image on them. Like, our boss is a very, you know, unreasonable person. And then we go and talk to him, imagining that he is going to be unreasonable. And
right.
That's a self-fulfilling prophecy in no time, you know.
Very true. I think especially in some of these, the art of face reading, the art of body language,
yeah,
it sometimes can be so misleading.
Absolutely.
You know, you end up creating notions much before you actually get down to talking to that person or, you know, having an interaction with that person. And sometimes, as you said, it's such a liberating feeling when you realize that you were wrong and, you know, the fact that you were trying to force your opinions on that person.
Exactly.
Even without indulging verbally.
Yes. And moving on, see, like, now Swami actually begins to examine our experience in very great detail. So, he looks at this, you know, he says the human body that is composed of the five basic elements. Now, over here, just a small aside, you know, so Swami says, Prithivi, Apa, Agni, Vayu and Akasha. So, these are the five basic elements of the universe that we see around us. So, I was just reading the Chandogya Upanishad that comes in the Samaveda. They give a very fascinating description of literally how the universe began, and I could see some parallels with cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first there is absolutely nothing, as the Nasadiya Suktam says.
Right.
Both there is neither being nor non-being.
Mm-hmm.
Complete void, so to speak. And in that void first arises the Akasha. So this is just, you know, the field, like, where things can arise.
Space.
It's just space. Yeah. it's you know, completely notional, but there is space. It's available for something to manifest. And the first thing to manifest is like Vayu. So Vayu is like, you know, a very diffuse gas. It's the, like, individual molecules. And the next stage is Agni. So you see the stuff of stars, you know, it begins, all the planets, the stars, they all begin with aggregated clusters of such gas and which are heated up.
Right.
Right. So that is the next stage called Agni. And then Apa. Now you see that, you know, as these molecules, they come closer and closer, they create this, the liquid phase. And then Prithivi, that is a solid phase. And of course, Swami, he cautions over here that this, what we see, any particular body is not uniquely Prithivi or Apa or Agni or Vayu. It's through the process of Panchikritam. He says that each object, it exhibits, like, it manifests various degrees of Prithivi, Apa, Vayu and Akasha. So that was a very fascinating read, you know, that, like, for me, I could clearly see that mapping to cosmology.
Very beautiful. In fact, because as we said, we were part of that discourse which is completely on that, how creation happens with these three gunas and how the permutations, combinations which lead to, interestingly, the subtle five elements and the gross five elements.
Yes.
I think at least I was not aware of such categorization.
There was some maintenance arithmetic out there.
Right. And very clearly Swami says that how, you know, within the dream, the appearance of that reality. Because Swami, first of all, he says that everything that you see is all the dream. But within that, Swami is saying that there is some kind of logic even in that dream when he's talking about how creation came about.
Hmm.
When he says that duality itself is unreal, Swami is also explaining that how there is a logic even in what you see as duality.
Hmm.
Maybe that is what carries you away.
Yes.
From the fact that it's unreal.
And yeah, he uses this as an access to, like, getting to, you know, there is a little bit of a paradox out here which will come in the, in the emerging points as we cover. It brings to mind, you know, there's this text called the Ashtavakra Samhita, and the way it begins is this, like, it's described. So the Ashtavakra Samhita, it starts with King Janaka, and he has a weird experience that one day he's in his palace.
Mm-hmm.
It's the afternoon and he's resting on his king, you know, the bed. And at some point of time he goes into a reverie. He starts seeing a dream.
Right.
And in that dream he's still the king.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is he goes and he's out there fighting a battle.
Okay.
And before long he's lost the battle and then he's beginning to run for his life. He's completely bereft of his armor and his weapons, everything. He's just a plain man. And he's running and he runs into a forest.
Mm-hmm.
In the forest there's a clearing where he encounters an old lady. And the old lady does not recognize him to the king.
The king.
And she says, you wait outside there, I'm not letting you inside my house. Out of compassion I'm going to give you some dal, some lentils for you to cook and, you know, so that you don't starve. And she gives him the lentils and he begins the process of cooking. When he's through with cooking, just at that moment two wild boar, in the jungle, they are fighting and they come screaming, and as they rush past, they have upset his vessel.
Okay.
And the lentils are all there on the ground and his dinner is totally destroyed. And it is at that moment, you know, of total despair when he sees that he has no more food, at that moment he wakes up.
Okay.
And as the story goes, when he wakes up, Swami used to say this in Telugu, Idi nijama, adi nijama.
Right.
He started thinking, which one of these dreams is true? In one dream, like, now as I wake up, I am the king, all the courtiers are there around me. But in that dream, I was nobody. Now, which one is true? And as it goes on, he then asks all the courtiers this question, all the intellectuals he has in his kingdom. He asks this question and whoever could not answer, he used to throw them into the dungeons because he was so after the truth. And that is when Ashtavakra, you know, Ashtavakra means he was bent in eight places. His body was so deformed. And such a person, he walks into the court and then begins the conversation that he has with King Janaka.
Right.
And just the same, you know, Swami is also using the fact that there is something, some essence that is common to both the dreams that we have when we are asleep as well as the experiences that we have when we are awake, so to speak.
Exactly.
And Swami will use that as the access to the truth.
Right. I think in one of the discourses, Swami says that, you know, that which does, you know, that which has a beginning and that which has an end actually has no middle too.
Hmm.
He says that only that is real which does not have a beginning and end.
And, yeah.
And Swami says, you realize it when you are in the waking state, when you see a dream, the very fact that you can wake up from the dream in real time, you know, in our human time, we wake up from a dream in maybe an hour or a few minutes. The very idea that you can go into a dream and come out of it makes you feel that it's unreal.
Right. Yes.
So Swami says, exactly like that, you are coming into this waking state and going out of this waking state. So isn't this waking state a dream of something which is larger than you?
Exactly. So,
and are you looking at that? Are you inquiring into that?
Yeah. And also, we should remember something else that Swami used to say. He used to say that sleep is like a short death.
Right.
And so we must begin to understand that the dream that we see when we sleep, of course, it terminates so quickly, which is then, you know, a different kind of experience succeeds that. But Swami reminds us that the same thing happens even with death. So after death, then we have another set of experiences when we begin to see that all that happened till then was a different dream altogether.
Right.
Which is then succeeded by another dream.
Right. In fact, you know, Swami says that, as you said, sleep is like the, you know, a sample of death. And Swami would say death is like the sample of that pralaya which happens.
Oh. Okay.
When Vishnu is awake, you know, creation happens and there's a dissolution which happens at the end of it. So Swami would say actually sleep is a sample of that cosmic drama coming into existence and then dissolving into itself.
Right.
Swami would say you are actually experiencing what, you know, every time when Vishnu, they say that Vishnu Maya, right?
Yeah.
All the world which you see is a dream of, you know, Mahavishnu.
In the,
so when he wakes up, the dream vanishes. And he says that is exactly the experience you go through when you wake up from a sleep or when you wake up from a dream. And then Swami here interestingly goes on to describe certain aspects of dream. You know, when you sit in, when you're in the middle of a dream, certain aspects of that which can be taken into this understanding of who you really are and this illusion of duality. Because Swami is saying, what are the characteristics?
Yeah.
You know, if 10 people are sleeping in the same room, you cannot have a common dream. Each one has its own dream. And Swami, I'm sure Swami is going to derive some beautiful lessons from these observations in that. And I was quite interested in the way Swami said, speaking about the body, he said it is paripurna jadam. You know, he did not say it is jadam or he did not say it's just merely unreal. He said he uses the word paripurna jadam. It's like there is not even a speck of it which is life, which is not inert. It is completely, you know, every particle of it is inert.
I remember a small poem of Kabir where he likened the body to be like, you know, like a lung. He says like it's almost like a lung and it only because of the man that breathes that lung appears to expand and contract. Otherwise it's a completely lifeless piece of leather out there, you know. It's
very true. And then of course Swami begins with that statement that there is no relationship between the dream and the waking state.
Yes.
There is no, I mean, there is nothing that you carry from the waking state to the dream state, and it is foolish to carry anything from the dream state to the waking state. So we'll, shall we go to the next clip in that discourse? We'll see what Swami has to say.
Yeah.
Oka vyakti ki swapnamulo tana mitrudu tanu aneka vidhamulaga himsinchinattuga kalalu kantadu.
One person may dream that his friend is giving him a lot of trouble.
Tellavari lechi mitrini koodi, o mitrama nannu enduku nee inta baadha pedtivi raatri ani prashninchinappudu mare pichivada nenu ninnu chudaneledhe ani taanu jawabu cheptadu.
The next day when he meets the friend and questions him, why did you give me so much of trouble? He would say, well,
anaga mitruni taane srishtinchukunnadu.
Oh madman,
atani baadhalanu taane srishtinchukunnadu.
That means that he has created friend in the dream.
Sarvaanubhutulu kuda nu taane srishtinchukunnadu.
He has created all the experiences for himself.
Kanuka swapnavasthayandu jarigeetuvanti yokka samasta anubhutulu kuda nu tanaku taane parimitam kaani ఎవరితోనో పరిమితం వ్యాప్తి అయి ఉండవు.
ఇన్ దిస్ వే ది ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ ఆఫ్ అ పర్సన్ ఇన్ ద డ్రీమ్ ఆర్ రెస్ట్రిక్టెడ్ టు హిమ్సెల్ఫ్. దే ఆర్ నాట్ ఎ రియాలిటీ ఇన్ ద రియల్ వరల్డ్ అట్ ఆల్.
సుఖ దుఃఖములను అనుభవించినది ఈ స్వప్నావస్థయే.
The experience of joy or sorrow is in this dream state.
Karmanugunyanga punarjanmamu dharinchunadi ee swapnavasthaye.
In the dream state, he may also get a rebirth.
Anaga sutra sarirame.
And that is the subtle body.
Indulo manasu pradhanamainadi.
In this state, mind plays a very important role.
ఈ మనస్సే సర్వమును కూడాను సృష్టింపజేస్తున్నది.
మైండ్ క్రియేట్స్ ది ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్ ఇన్ ద డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్.
మనోమూలం మిదం జగత్, ప్రపంచమంతయకుడును మనోమయంతోనే కూడి ఉంటున్నది.
ది ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్ ఈజ్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్. ఇట్ ఇస్ ద మైండ్ విచ్ క్రియేట్.
మనస్సు ఒక్కటే అయినప్పటికీ తాను చేసేటువంటి వివిధ కర్మలను పురస్కరించుకుని దీనికి వివిధ పేర్లు కూడాను కలుగుతూ వచ్చాయి.
Mind has been given different names on the basis of the functions which it performs.
Sankalpa vikalpamulu cheyatam cheta deeniki manasu ani peru.
It gets the name manas on account of the thought processes which it gets.
Nitya anitya visheper parisilana cheyatam cheta deenike buddhi ani peru.
Mind is also called intellect when it discriminates.
నిరంతరము చింతించటం చేత దీనికి చిత్తము అని మరొక పేరు.
యాజ్ ఇట్ గోస్ ఆన్ రిమెంబరింగ్ థింగ్స్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఆల్సో కాల్డ్ చిత్త.
దేహంతో తాదాత్మ భావమును పొందినప్పుడు దీనికి అహంకారము అని పేరు.
వెన్ మైండ్ ఐడెంటిఫైస్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ విత్ ద ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ ఈగో.
మనసు బుద్ధి చిత్తము అహంకారము ఇది మనసు యొక్క పర్యాయ పదములే.
ది ఫోర్ వర్డ్స్ మైండ్, chitta, intellect and ego are only four names for the same mind.
ఈ నాలుగింటి యొక్క సన్మిళిత సంబంధమైనటువంటి స్వరూపమే అంతఃకరణ.
అంతఃకరణ ఈజ్ పుట్టింగ్ టుగెదర్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దీస్ ఫోర్.
కనుక జాగ్రత్త స్వప్నములు రెండు కూడాను కేవలము మానసిక కల్పితములే.
ది వేకింగ్ స్టేట్ యాజ్ వెల్ ఆఫ్ ది డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ ఆర్ ద క్రియేషన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్.
మూడవది సుషుప్తి.
The third one is Sushupti.
Sushupti anaga su anaga manchi.
Su stands for
Shupti anaga oka nidra.
Sushupti therefore stands for
manchi nidra.
Good sleep, sound sleep.
Aite indulo manasu ledu.
In this state there is no mind.
Manasu lekapovatam cheta prapancham kudanu ledu.
As there is no mind, there is no world also.
ప్రపంచం లేకపోవటం చేత సుఖ దుఃఖములు కూడాను లేవు.
As there is no world, man does not have joy or sorrow also.
మనసు ఉండినంత వరకే ఈ ప్రపంచం.
The world exists as long as mind lasts.
ప్రపంచం మనతో చుట్టుకున్నంత వరకే ఈ సుఖ దుఃఖములు.
As long as you are concerned with the world, you have got sorrow or joy.
సుఖ దుఃఖములకు ప్రపంచమే మూల కారణము.
Therefore, for joy or sorrow, it is the world which is responsible.
ప్రపంచమునకు మనస్సే కారణము.
For the world, it is the mind which is responsible.
కనుకనే మన ఏవ మనుష్యానాం కారణం బంధమోచయో అని సమస్త బంధములకు సమస్త స్వాతంత్రములకు ఈ మనస్సే మూల కారణం.
In this context, it is said, mind is responsible for the bondage as well as the freedom or liberation.
అయితే ఈ అన్నింటికి అతీతమైనటువంటి యొక్క స్థితియే ఆత్మస్థితి.
బట్ దేర్ ఈజ్ వన్ మోర్ స్టేట్, ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్ స్టేట్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మిక్ స్టేట్.
మానవుడు ఈ జాగ్రత్త, స్వప్న, సుషుప్తి శరీరముల యొక్క తాదాత్మ్యం పొందటం చేతనే ఆత్మను మర్చిపోతున్నాడు.
మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ ఫర్గెటింగ్ ఆత్మ బికాస్ హీ ఐడెంటిఫైస్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ విత్ ద వేకింగ్ స్టేట్, డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ అండ్ డీప్ స్లీప్ స్టేట్.
అయితే అన్ని అనుభూతులకు కూడాను ఆత్మనే ఆధారం.
బట్ ఫర్ ఆల్ ది ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ ద బేసిస్ ఈజ్ ఆత్మ.
మృత్పిండమేకం బహుభాండరూపం సువర్ణమేకం బహుభూషణాని గోచీరమేకం బహుదేనుభూతి ఏకం పరాత్మ బహుదేహవర్తి మృత్పిండమేకం బహుపాండరూపం. మట్టి ఒక్కటే అయినప్పటికీ దీనిచే కల్పింపబడినటువంటి ఆకారములు అనేకముగా ఉంటున్నాయి.
మట్ ఈజ్ వన్ బట్ పార్ట్స్ క్రియేటెడ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ మట్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్ ఇన్ ఫార్మ్స్ అండ్ నేమ్.
ఆభరణములు అనేకమైనప్పటికీ ఇందులో సువర్ణము ఒక్కటిగానే ఉంటుంది.
దేర్ ఈజ్ ఓన్లీ వన్ గోల్డ్ బట్ జ్యువెలరీ మే బి డిఫరెంట్.
అదే విధముగానే ఆకారములు వేరువేరైనప్పటికీ ఆత్మతత్వం ఒక్కటే.
ఇన్ ద సేమ్ వే ఫార్మ్స్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్ బట్ ద ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ ఈజ్ వన్.
ఇట్టి ఆధారభూతమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మతత్వాన్ని విస్మరించి శారీర ఇంద్రియ మనోబుద్ధుల యొక్క స్వభావమునే మానవుడు అనుసరించటం చేతనే అజ్ఞానమునకు గురి అవుతున్నాడు.
మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ ఫిల్డ్ విత్ ఇగ్నోరెన్స్ బికాస్ హీఈస్ ఫాలోయింగ్ ది ఫిజికల్ బాడీ అండ్ ఇట్స్ లింబ్స్ ఫర్గెటింగ్ ఆత్మ విచ్ ఇస్ ది బేసిస్ ఆఫ్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్.
సముద్రమునందు అసంఖ్యాకములైన అలలు చెలరేగుతున్నాయి.
There will be innumerable waves in a ocean.
ఒక అల ఉండినట్టుగా మరొక అల మనకు కనిపించదు.
There would not be any similarity between any two waves.
అలలు వేరువేరుగా మనకు గోచరిస్తాయి.
Waves appear differently to us.
కానీ అన్ని అలలు ఎందుకుడను జలము ఒక్కటే అనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని మనం విస్మరిస్తున్నాం.
But we are giving up the truth that water in all these waves is the same.
మానవ స్వరూపములు అనంతమైనటువంటి ఒక రూపములుగా కనిపిస్తుంటాయి.
You come across innumerable forms of the human beings.
ఇది సచ్చిదానంద సాగరమునందు ఆవిర్భవించేటువంటి అలలు మాత్రమే.
All these human beings are waves in the ocean of Sachidananda.
ఈ రూపనామములు వేరువేరుగా మనకు కనిపించవచ్చును, కానీ అన్నింటికీ ఆధారము ఆత్మనే.
Names and forms appear to be different, but the basis of Atma is one and the same.
There was a second clip, of course, and Swami was in the middle of saying something. We'll have to wait till the next week to get there. And Swami is continuing with, Swami spoke about the dream state. Then, as we said, Swami was describing certain aspects of dreaming, where one, he said that what is there in the dream state is not related to the waking state. The other is, the dream is self-created. And, there is no relation to what one's dream has to the others. That is what Swami says. And then Swami goes on to talk about the sukshma sharira, or the subtle body. And which is quite interesting, because that is where the aspect of the antakarnas, or the mind, come in,
yes. Actually, the previous segment, we ended with Swami speaking about how when we have 10 people sleeping in the same room,
mm-hmm.
like each person's dream is so unique to himself.
Right.
And this brought to mind, you know, some a question that somebody posed to me a few days back, and they said, like, what is reality?
Mm-hmm.
And just as I was trying to reply to, you know, what is reality, I realized the problem is with the word is. Because if there are 7 billion people on this planet, there are absolutely 7 billion versions of reality. Because we see, you know, whatever happens, we see it through the filter of our experiences. Whatever we are, and we, as Shankaracharya said, we tend to superimpose our properties onto what we see, and then we call that as reality. And as we begin to wonder, like, what is the relationship between these 10 people who are seeing like entirely different dreams, and how do we connect them to this oneness? And then Swami, actually at the end of the segment, he gives a reply, and he says that this is so much like waves that appear in the ocean. So each wave, as it, you know, rises, you can see it has a very complex behavior. Like, it rises, and then there are some small little turbulence that you see, and then there's a whole performance out there if you can watch it in slow motion. But ultimately, it settles down back into the ocean, into its essence. And that is how like although you may be seeing, each of us is seeing an entirely different dream altogether, we are all connected because we are all arising from that same ocean. And Swami calls this ocean being awareness bliss, Satchit Ananda.
And if you look at it, you know, suppose two people are standing in a boat and seeing the waves, and let's say that one person is trying to describe one particular wave. You know, it is to say that, you know, do you see that bigger wave which is behind this, you know, smaller pool of a whirlpool or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, it is only to point out and to kind of explain to the other person. In that sense, if you see Swami saying that all waves are different only for a minuscule, you know, point of time,
yeah.
And it is called a wave only to differentiate it from the ocean. You know, if you were to show somebody, you know, look at that ocean, look at this part of the ocean, look at that part of the ocean. It's almost like to, for the ease of understanding and for the ease of explanation, it is that division which is given. And that's what Swami is saying here, that, you know, though you appear like different people, though duality is the most obvious thing that we see, it is only for, you know, the practical purposes of going through this dream that you see the difference.
And then Swami identifies over here, you know, what is the main cause? The culprit, so to speak, he has just caught him red-handed, and that is the mind. He says that whatever dream that we are witnessing, and that is entirely created where? In the mind. And this brought to, you know, memory something that I had read a few days back. This is a saying of a master, and he said, think of yourself as the point of a pencil. By mere contact with you, the mind draws its picture of the world, right? And whereas you are single and simple, you are merely a pencil point, and the picture is so complex and extensive. And he says, do not be misled by the picture. So we tend to look at the picture that emerges, and we forget who we are. And he says, remain aware of that tiny point. And how? Because it is everywhere in that picture. Like that pencil, the small little pencil point has drawn that entire picture. And he says that it is because the mind came in contact with you that all this became possible.
Right. And in fact, even as you were saying about that question somebody asked you, what is reality? And, you know, when you look at it, when a question comes, you know, you might ask the question, what is reality? Or somebody might ask, I might ask. When we ask that question, the kind of emotions and the experience which back that question is completely different.
Absolutely.
And that is why making giving an answer for that becomes so difficult. And reminded of a quote which I read some time back, you know, it says, a wise man can answer your questions, but it takes a master to answer you. You know, because that's what, when Swami would give answers to us, if we were to ask questions, Swami would give answers which absolutely and directly pertain to us. Not a general answer which could be written in a book. And that's why many times I think it takes time till you would have read a discourse of Swami sometime back. But when you read it 5 years later, you find answers which you didn't find it 5 years back.
Yes, anything that Swami says, it we have to marinate in that for some time. Like, test it against our daily experience. And only then can we understand, you know, from time to time our perceptions, our understanding of it completely changes.
Right. And in a sense, we also had a view of why this discourse is more like a summary of the 1990 Sambhukosa series. Because in the previous paragraph, Swami spoke about how the various elements come to form the body. And then Swami speaks about the four aspects of the mind, which of course we had a complete discourse in that 1990 series. Where Swami spoke, in fact, not one discourse. Swami spoke of one discourse about these four aspects and then dedicated each discourse for each of these. There was one on buddhi, one on ahankara, one on you know, the other aspects of the mind, chitta and the rest. So that is what Swami says. And the beautiful thing is the way Swami explained the state of sushupti, of deep sleep.
Yeah.
Because as we said that in human experience, you have the waking state, the sleep, the dream state, and the state when there is deep sleep. I think most of us go through it. And in that discourse, when Swami earlier discourse where Swami mentioned this, Swami said all your energy you draw from that deep sleep.
Right.
You know, in a day when you sleep for 6 to 7 hours, in that 6 to 7 hours, there is only a limited period where you get that deep sleep, where you have absolutely thoughtless, dreamless sleep. And Swami says that is what energizes your day. And that itself, in a sense, you know, gives you that idea that the maximum you're able to silence that mind or keep your real self away from the mind, that's what can give you that energy. And
that's what rejuvenates you. That we speak, no, when we come out of, we had a completely dreamless sleep, and that's when we feel completely re-energized.
Right.
Because, so just to give a little bit of background, as we were talking about these various stages of sleep itself,
mm-hmm.
In the Upanishads they say that they kind of distinguish between what happens at these various stages of sleep.
Okay.
So in like, at when we have the stage of sleep, as we call REM, rapid eye movement, at that stage, they say that the mind has, of course, withdrawn the senses. Then what is it that, you know, why is it that we continue to see the dream? And the Upanishads, they clarify that this is because of the vayu, the various forms of vayu, prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. And they say these are still circulating. And that is what really still keeps you, as in the mind is still awake and it is able to create an entire world even when you are still asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, this mind is also finally withdrawn. The vayus also, so to speak, they calm down. Mm-hmm. And then the mind itself is withdrawn. And then it rests in the self. And that is when we experience that deep sleep. And that's why we have that experience of complete rejuvenation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are now we had been very briefly into that state of sushupti where we are identical with consciousness.
Okay.
And again the Upanishads clarify, you know, some will have this idea, this, okay, having gone back there, why did we, you know, again come back into this, the waking dream? And the Upanishads again clarify that even at that stage, the identity is still latent.
Mm-hmm.
That the entire apparatus of who we are, the body and right, the mind, right. You know, the entire apparatus is still lying latent.
Mm-hmm.
And waiting to be expressed after the sleep is through.
You know, just as you were saying about what does the mind do after it withdraws the senses, especially in that sleep state. A beautiful quote by Rabindranath Tagore.
Mm. You
know, he says, I've just got it here. He says, in the drowsy dark cave of the mind, dreams build their nest with fragments dropped from the day's caravan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True. You know, the input has stopped.
Yes.
Taking in fresh input has stopped. But whatever has been drawn till that point in the day starts getting processed by the mind.
Yeah, the experiences of the past few days, somehow they get mishmashed and we get what is called this dream.
Right. And of course then Swami, as we spoke about that, the wave analogy.
Mm.
Again, there's the second analogy in that thing. And this is also something which is quite often quoted in Vedanta.
Hmm.
Many places is the waves and the ocean being Satchidananda. That's a very common analogy.
Yeah. And you know, I was just thinking, you know, through this discourse as to why is Swami all the time he's engaged in this inquiry called who we are truly.
Mm-hmm.
At all points of time, we are so obsessed with the world, you know, like the activities that we do, our day-to-day routines, whatever goals we've got to achieve this and that. And Swami is always trying to divert our mind away from all this. These are anyway happening, but there is something beyond. And to me, this the story in the Mahabharata, that comes very strongly to mind. This is right at the end of the Mahabharata.
Mm-hmm.
So, the war has ended and Krishna and Arjuna in their chariot, they now traveled back to their camp. And at that point of time, like Krishna says to Arjuna, you get off.
Mm-hmm.
And the Arjuna, having been victorious in the war, that ego is now so strong, that pride is so strong, he forgets who Krishna is and he says, you are the charioteer and you are supposed to get off first and help me down.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna again tells him no. And again, Arjuna repeats, no, first you get off. And then Krishna suddenly is very stern and he commands him very strongly to get off the chariot. And that brings Arjuna back to his senses. He jumps off. And then when Krishna gets off the chariot blows up in flames.
Right.
And then Krishna, he gives the entire explanation. He says, all this time you were so engrossed in the war that you never noticed all those arrows that were coming to sting you.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know who is the one that completely absorbed all these arrows into himself? It was I. And this is the reason we entirely so engrossed with whatever we are doing, we forget our true nature, and that is our divinity. And we always forget that whatever happens is happening through the grace of this particular, of this divinity.
Right.
And that this story seeks to remind us of that. And that is why Swami is always bringing us back to divinity. Like no matter what happens in the real world, in the world around us, but he's bringing us back to our true nature.
Right. And I think there are many ways in which Swami did it. And one of the most, the strongest ways, of course, Swami used and most of the masters used was that of devotion.
Yeah.
You know, when you have somebody who's an embodiment of purity,
yes,
if we could get into the habit of having that complete obedience, that itself is in a process of overriding the mind. You know, where you kind of overrule the vagaries of the mind and you're trying to surrender to the, you know, the will of somebody who's completely pure. And that is followed with the learning that master is none other than your own self. And that is when the journey, you know, becomes from that of devotion to Advaita, yes, which is so instantaneous and quite effortless in that sense. So that, dear listeners, will bring us to the end of this program. Thank you, Hari, for being with us.
And thank you, Prem, for the opportunity.
We hope to continue this discourse next week, dear listeners. As we said, we'll conclude Shravanam Mananam Nithidhyasanam as a program with this discourse. We hope you will join us next week too. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu with the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. He's here already. He's here with his special guest. It's indeed a very interesting program lined up next. Please do stay with us. Till we meet you next week, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and on behalf of Hari, offering this humble segment of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet.